Chapter 74. The Painted Suns. Sidney Grice was unusually cheery over dinner that evening, humming what might have been a tune once, as he browsed a crisp new copy of Stringwater's Illustrated History of Clog Fighting. "How was your trip to Limehouse?" I asked. Cook had roasted some vegetables for a change, and, with great quantities of salt and pepper, they were almost worth eating. My guardian dusted his carrots with mustard powder.
"I managed to persuade Mr. Jones Chang Fu that talking to me was preferable to a visit from Inspector Pound, who has gained an unfortunate reputation for being incorruptible."
Spirit sprang into the chair next to his. "Unfortunate?"
"Nobody believes in reputations anymore," he said,
in what sounded like the start of a witty aphorism, but never became one. "And did Mr. Jones tell you anything useful?"
"Indeed,"
he agreed readily.
"He told me there is a clipper with a consignment of high-quality Assam tea waiting to dock in the morning."
"And did he happen to mention anything relevant about Lucy Bocking?"
"He told me one thing."
He poked a toothpick in the hole of his salt cellar and blew.
"That while she was being assaulted, she cried out, 'Stop it, you fool!'"
"Was he in the room, then?" I asked, and my guardian exchanged patient glances with Spirit.
"I thought it was so obvious that I did not trouble to mention it," he explained. "The inkwell Jones peered into is a periscope. When I dropped so elegantly to the floor during our first visit, I saw that there was a pipe leading from it through the ceiling. It also acts as a hearing tube."
"Into one of those painted suns," I guessed.
"You are guessing," he complained.
"No, I am not."
"Nonetheless, you are correct."
He trickled vinegar onto his potatoes. "So Mr. Jones not only permits women to be attacked on his premises," I deduced, "he likes to watch."
"We all like to watch."
Mr. G. folded the bottom corner of a page down and, before I could express my distaste at his remark, continued,
"It is what we like to watch that differentiates some of us from beasts or stockbrokers."
"Why, when you insist that food should be tasteless, do you always use so many condiments?" I poured myself some water.
"Food should not have flavour."
He dipped a spoon into the horseradish.
"But flavourings, by definition, should. I have received,"
he slipped an envelope out from under the tablecloth,
"a very civil letter from St. Philomena's Convent, outlining all the holy works they perform. If you would care to peruse it, I can place it upon my tableware transference device and convey it to you in 23 seconds.
"No, thank you." Mr. G. pouted at this lost opportunity to play with his new toy, a continuous belt of thin wooden slats running the length of the table and powered by a foot pedal.
"The Mother Superior leaves me with no reasonable doubt that they would appreciate a donation, and the larger the better."
Molly was tramping up the stairs. "Then they must be happy that you offered one." Sidney Grice greeted my statement blankly.
"You appear to have mistaken my inquiry as to whether they would welcome a donation for an intent to give them one."
He turned the page over.
"And so apparently has the Reverend Mother Mary Peter, who has offered to say prayers for my soul, though I am not sure—"
He refolded the letter and placed it tantalizingly upon the transference belt.
"What gave her the impression that I had one?"
"The fact that you are human." I remained untantalized.
"Am I?"
Molly burst in and Spirit jumped.
"Why are you here?"
Sidney Grice snapped.
"I've come to clear,"
Molly announced. "But we have not finished eating," I told her, before her employer could give her the same information more aggressively.
"What?"
She pulled her neck back incredulously.
"Cook didn't not never think you'd eat any of that."
And two stories below us, the doorbell rang.